This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the question of the Northern Ireland Protocol is still very live. This dispute between the European Union and the British government is something that has gone under the radar for 10 days, but the talks continue between Maros Sefcovic, who is representing the European Union, and David Frost, or Lord Frost, as he's now called, who is Boris Johnson's man on the European question. It's a very, very serious matter. The outcome, if it goes wrong, will be a trade war. Britain will unilaterally trigger Article 16 of the protocol, and we'll all be in serious trouble. There were developments this week. There are talks today, Friday, between Sefcovic and Frost, but there's no sign of a satisfactory outcome. However, one dimension of this dispute did become clear yesterday when we learned yet again that the US and the Biden administration have taken a serious interest in this, and there were tariffs imposed by the Trump administration on Europe and Britain in relation to steel. I think it was a 20% tariff. The Biden administration has lifted that tariff for the Europeans, but not for the British, and they've let it be known that it is because of this dispute between the EU and Britain about the Northern Ireland Protocol. To discuss this, we're joined by Chris Johns, former chief economist of the Bank of Ireland, now a very successful commentator, and he has his own podcast as well, The Other Hand, and he joins us from London. Chris, this is an important signal the Biden administration is sending, and it's not the first signal they've sent, that if the British keep messing with Europe and with, in particular, the Good Friday Agreement and all its consequences, the Biden administration will mess with them.
Yeah, the consequences of Brexit keep piling up in all sorts of different ways. And rather than those consequences being assertions or theoretical predictions, they're now coming true. And this is one of them in the ways in which international trade negotiations are often very nasty, very messy, and get all sorts of issues rolled up into them. And the steel thing is interesting. It's the second big one that we've been made aware of in the last few weeks with respect to things that Britain has given up in regard to Brexit. The first, of course, was the refugee crisis, no longer part of the Dublin arrangement, the Dublin agreement within the EU, that refugees could be sent back. Britain no longer has that advantage, if you like, if that's what you want to call it, and has contributed to that crisis. It's no longer a member of the EU, so it's no longer a member of that Dublin Agreement, as it's called. The second hard consequence of Brexit has been this steel agreement that you referred to just there. Donald Trump put these tariffs on, and Joe Biden has taken them off for the EU. And of course, Britain is no longer a member of the EU, so the tariffs remained. And they, as you say, have let it be known that they're conflating the Northern Ireland Protocol with these discussions over these steel tariffs. There is a mini trade war, if you like, between Britain and the United States. The EU and Britain reciprocated with tariffs on things like US bourbon coming into the United Kingdom. So this is what a small trade war looks like, and gives you a hint of what might happen if a full-scale trade war was triggered with the EU. It gets very nasty very, very quickly.
Yes.
And there have been pained expressions of puzzlement almost from the relevant Department of Trade and Industry that's responsible for these sorts of things, and also 10 Downing Street. Spokesmen from both entities have, with a pained expression on their face, saying there's no connection between the Northern Ireland Protocol and steel tariffs. You know, it's ridiculous. And the simple realpolitik fact is that there is, because the US says there is, and that's just the way trade negotiations are conducted. So Britain, as this freewheeling, buccaneering, able to do whatever it likes in the world, has received two slaps very recently, with an awful lot more to come, because finding ourselves as a third country, as the EU now calls us, and just a small, not terribly important economy as the United States regards us, is a hard lesson for the Brexiteers to learn. I mentioned there have been other pieces of evidence as well coming about out over the effects of Brexit. And now the studies, the actual looking at the data research is starting to emerge. And for example, there's one out, a major study from the Centre for European Reform only this week, which showed that UK worldwide trading goods are now 11.2% lower than would have been for Brexit. And yeah. I could cite a number of other similar studies that reached similar conclusions based on the numbers. And it's looking like that by the end of this decade, the UK economy will be 4 or 5% smaller than it would otherwise have been because of Brexit. Now, that might sound a bit dry. People might wonder whether how that's going to impact on their lives. But there has been one estimate already that the tax rises that we've seen, the famous rise in national insurance, wouldn't have had to have happened if Brexit hadn't happened, because the reason why our tax revenues are so much lower than they would have been is because we've left the EU. So these dry GDP trade statistics do have real impacts on people's lives.
Yes, and it's particularly significant that the US has let them know how they feel about messing with the protocol and indeed tearing up an agreement potentially. It's interesting that Liz Truss, the new foreign secretary, who is, I'm afraid, comes into one of the category of right-wing hacks that you refer to in your famous description of the Johnson cabinet as right-wing hacks, journalists, and after-dinner speakers. She's entirely unfit to be foreign secretary, but she has decided to pivot away from Europe, and one of the places she wants to pivot to is the United States of America. So they're making themselves look incredibly foolish, and they're going to have to come to terms. There was a lot of talk of a trade deal with the United States, but that's not going to happen, particularly if the Northern Ireland issue isn't settled to America's satisfaction, and therefore to Europe's and our satisfaction here.
Yes, and it's important to note that Liz Truss is a player when it comes to all sorts of things, not least in terms of her popularity within the Conservative Party, because it's the Conservative Party that when the time comes, and it will come, and Johnson is replaced, it's the Conservative Party, members of the Conservative Party, that yes. vote for the new leader. And in repeated polling of the members of the Conservative Party, Liz Truss is the one that comes out on top.
It's extraordinary. She had herself photographed this week in a tank, an exact replica of a photograph Margaret Thatcher famously did 30 years ago now or more. And she is clearly intent on a sort of branding herself as a latter-day Margaret Thatcher.
Yes, and we talk about politicians when they're starting to think about the next leadership race as being on manoeuvres, and being photographed in that tank is Liz Truss quite literally on manoeuvres as trying to establish herself as a prominent candidate to replace Johnson. If it wasn't so tragic, it would be funny. But the way in which she and others, but in particular in a previous role actually, but also in her current one, is trying to establish this global Britain, is trying to generate those headlines about free trade deals with countries like Australia. And as I've said many times, I think the only free trade deals that they have managed to do, and they've been quite a few in fairness, have been to simply roll over the arrangements that Britain had already as a member yes. of the EU. which lapsed when Britain left. Nothing new or substantive by way of global buccaneering, free trading Britain has been achieved. And the way in which they're doing this speaks to how they've actually misjudged the consequences of Brexit from that international trade perspective. That they thought that by going around and negotiating free trade deals with the United States, with Australia, and all these other countries that they either have done or hope to do, that they would actually increase the size of the British economy, that they would give a boost to economic growth. Yes. And it's technical, but what they don't understand is what they've given up, is that in the 19th century, tariffs were the most important thing. So free trade agreements 100 years ago or more were very important from a tariff point of view. And that's what they negotiated with the trade and cooperation agreement with Europe, which was a bare bones, very thin, tariff-free agreement. And what they never have understood, and they still to this present day don't understand, that the modern world of free trade involves non-tariff barriers, which are still very, very present in Britain's relationship with the EU and indeed with the rest of the world. And it affects services more than it affects actual goods, but these non-tariff barriers do affect goods. So they've not been able to do anything about these non-tariff barriers. And in a way, if you ask me what is a typical non-tariff barrier, well, a very atypical one is this barrier that Joe Biden has thrown up with respect to the steel agreement. Yeah. A barrier to doing that trade agreement is the Northern Ireland Protocol. You can bring anything into the discussions, and they will, yes, to try and stymie Britain to achieve their objectives. These trade negotiations are incredibly hard-headed. They're run by very tough, very ruthless people who are often steeped in this game, who've been doing it for decades. European trade negotiators are exactly like this. So are the US. The US trade negotiators are the most hard-headed of people that you could possibly wish to see. And they will do Britain down if they can, and so it is proving.
And one of the things it is said that they would find mouth-watering is access to the British National Health Service for their pharma companies, a number of which are based here. Just in the light of what you said in the last few minutes, Chris, the capacity of Boris Johnson to even think through any of this, never mind to act on what he reflected on, he's really a clown, isn't he? And nothing more. A clownish, old Etonian, fit for journalism, in a kind of way, but he couldn't even observe the very loose rules of journalism. This week, President Macron described him as, and I quote, a clown. This is really bad for Britain and bad for Johnson. I mean, it is proving to be a pretty hopeless government. I know we don't be banging the same drum every time we talk to you, but last night in Bexley in a by-election, which was held because James Brokenshire died of lung cancer, actually, at age 53, a former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. It was a safe seat, 19,000 majority. They won it last night with a 4,000 majority. But the point of Johnson is hard to see anymore because of his complete disregard for responsibility. For example, he's fighting now with his health people this week about an office party that he threw this time 12 months ago, or later in December, which was flagrantly in, you know, contrast to the law at that time.
Yeah, the Christmas party is one thing, and I'll come on to that in a moment, but talking about your Macron and how France is viewing things at the moment is really interesting, because in France, and indeed elsewhere here in the UK, both sides of this fight have described Anglo-French relations as being similar to where they were at the time of the Battle of Waterloo. Yes. Things are that bad. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I don't think that's an exaggeration. They really, really couldn't be worse. And they did describe him as a clown. You have said the famous list of things that you and I have agreed on that have described the Tory party's right-wing hacks, journalists, and afternoon speakers. I would add charlatan to that list now. I think that there is a fourth list, item on this list of attributes. And the way in which they repeatedly demonstrate their contempt for the rules that they believe in the time-honoured way that the rules are for little people. It just happens almost on a weekly basis now. On December the 18th last year, there was, by all accounts, a Christmas party in Downing Street, and the issue seems to be rest on whether or not you could classify it as a party. The BBC, for once, has actually been very good on this and has not shied away from taking them on. And a very, very good journalist called Chris Mason, already famously said this week, well, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, and swims like a duck, then it was a Christmas party, because there was food, yeah. There was dancing, there was singing, and there were party games, and it went on till past midnight and plenty of alcohol. This was on December the 18th, just, I think, 24 hours before Johnson went on national television to essentially introduce new rules and regulations. London was already in back then, what was called stage three of coronavirus restrictions, and he upped them a day later to essentially cancel Christmas. People were banned from forming any kind of groups over Christmas other than the smallest of family bubbles. At the same time, students were being fined spot fines, on-the-spot fines of £10,000 for having gatherings in their dormitories or residences. People were dying in hospital, not being able to be seen by their families, friends, or loved ones. And there have been countless people appearing on the airwaves this week saying how distraught, quite rightly distraught, they are that this was going on in Downing Street at a time when they were not being able to visit their dying relatives. So I don't think you could exaggerate the significance of this and how it seems to cut through, particularly to people who have either been fined for breaking the coronavirus restrictions and or prevented from seeing loved ones who are sick or worse. This has real salience, and I think that it really is damaging for Johnson. And it has been noticeable that under persistent questioning by Keir Starmer in the House of Commons, his response has been that the rules, the regulations were adhered to, but has refused to answer the question whether or not it was a party. Because if it was a party, then that was, according to one leading QC, in the rules at the time stated quite clearly that having a party was a criminal offence.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Now, the other issue that's stalking him is the question of how to deal with COVID, in particular with Omicron, the new variant. He said the chief health officer, or one of them, Jenny Harris, has said to people that her advice and the advice of the scientists is that you should cut back on your socializing, your social life. Don't socialize unnecessarily. Only do it when necessary. That's the best defense until we realize or until we discover how serious the Omicron variant is. However, Johnson on the same day said, don't cut back, and I quote, I'm quoting him, go out, we're having our Christmas. So that sort of disconnect is infuriating as well, and really dangerous too, because if people don't pay attention to what is happening in the public health dimension of this pandemic, it's grim.
Yeah, and this has been a pattern, frankly, on both sides of the Irish Sea and elsewhere throughout this pandemic, is that the rules seem to be made up as we go along. Ministers say things that contradict the things that their colleagues say, and people like you and me end up very confused as to what we are actually allowed to do or not. What is a recommendation? What is law? And so we get this mishmash of stuff, so that until yesterday, the rules in Wales, Scotland and England were all different. So in Wales, if I wanted to, in the unlikely event that I wanted to go to a nightclub, I would have to show a COVID pass. In London, that was not the case. It still isn't the case. In Wales, you would have to wear a mask on a bus to go to your nightclub. You'd have to show your COVID pass at the door of the nightclub, and then when you get into the nightclub, take your mask off, put your COVID pass away, dance, drink, and shout and scream with unrestricted numbers in very, very close proximity. The antithesis, the opposite of social distancing, and it goes on. And so we get one minister famously said this week that she wouldn't recommend that we snog a stranger at Christmas.
I suspect. Under the mistletoe, her name was Therese Coffey. And she comes under the heading of right-wing hacks, by the way, as does Liz Truss. She's minister for something. I want to ask you about something very serious that is in your area of a particular expertise, and that is economics. Jerome Powell, J. Powell as he's known, is the chair of the Federal Reserve in the United States, and he gave evidence this week to the Senate's Banking Committee. Now, he is an Obama appointee. He's been held over somewhat controversially by Biden, and he is a very important figure, Chris, as I'm sure you know. He said his concern about inflation was so serious now that what he had called a transitory inflation last year, he said the word transitory should be retired. And his concern is serious now. It's running at about something over between 5 and 6%, I think. This is the most powerful economy in the world. Biden's polls are bad anyway, and they've been knocked a bit more by this inflationary experience the United States is having. How dangerous is inflation? How important for us and Europe is what Jay Powell says, and indeed what he does as chair of the Federal Reserve?
The reason why he called it transitory in the first place, and for right up until this week, was that what happened during the pandemic in every economy, not just the United States, but particularly the US, is that people staying at home, not going to shops, switched how they spent their money in an amazing way, actually. This hasn't been remarked on nearly enough in anything other than the business pages. And people spending money on services, the most obvious example, cliched example, is haircuts. People didn't bother to get their hair cut. But they did spend their money, usually via online shopping, on goods, physical things, reversing a trend of recent years and decades almost completely, albeit for a short period of time. And in buying goods, stuff to be delivered to our front doors, they created globally huge bottlenecks in what we call supply chains. Because often the stuff that arrives at our door, in whole or in part, is made in China and in foreign countries, and the different bits of the things that we get delivered are made in all sorts of different countries. And the supply chains were not ready for this big increase in demand for physical stuff. So these bottlenecks were at ports, They contributed to the shortage of HGV drivers. There were ships anchored off the west coast of the United States for days on end because they couldn't get into Long Beach in California, and ports in China were similarly gummed up. So the reason why that is thought to be transitory is in the nature of the problem, in that once that thing sorts itself out, and the combination of the goods producers getting themselves sorted out and demand, those patterns of demand that I just described, reestablishing themselves, in that we won't go on increasing our demand for goods forever, then that eventually gets sorted out. It's a bulge in the pipeline that eventually goes in one end and comes out of the other, and it's sorted out, and it's temporary. The reason why Powell has said that the transitory word needs to be retired is that it already has lasted a lot longer than people thought. It's been a bigger problem than anybody forecast. So that inflation rate of over 6% in the United States, this time last year, nobody thought we would ever get here. Nobody thought we'd ever get here again, actually. And around the world, it's a problem of varying degrees. In Turkey, inflation is over 21% right now. They have a real problem.
I read that this morning and I wondered how important or significant it was in the bigger picture, in the bigger scheme of things.
Well, it's not the biggest deal in the world, Turkish inflation, unless you're somebody in Turkey. But a Turkish pensioner, like any other pensioner around the world that's on a fixed income, that isn't on what we call an index-linked pension, will be hurt very badly by 21% inflation. Typically, what happens is that people on lower incomes in Turkey and elsewhere are the ones that are hurt the most by inflation, because we're seeing things like food, housing costs, fuel costs, the things that take up huge proportions of poorer people's budgets, are the ones that are affected by this. And in the United States, it's really cutting through, because the salient issue, for very United States reasons, is the price of a gallon of gas.
Yes.
And that's the thing that attracts all the headlines in the States. And the thing that polling reveals is that the price of both gasoline, petrol, and foodstuffs, the price of meat in particular in the United States, are two issues that Biden is being blamed for their rises. Now, he will clearly be hoping that this is temporary. It already has proven not to be, but he hopes that by the time the midterms come up this time next year, that this will have all gone away. It is perhaps, I hope, ironic that Powell retired that word transitory this week at a time when there are a few signs, or at least pre the new variant, that some of these inflationary bulges were starting to work their way through the system. Yes. Certain key prices of certain key commodities were starting to fall, oil being one of them, wood being another. One of the great leading indicators of this inflation has been the price of timber, actually. But other commodity prices have shown signs of coming off the top as well. But the new variant will just bring back all of those pipeline issues that I spoke about, because what we know from the now near 2 years economic experience of the pandemic is that economies are incredibly resilient to this, and that even if we went back into full lockdown, nobody expects the economic consequences of full lockdown to be anything like what they were the first time around, because the adaptation of economies has been so successful. We move online, basically, both in terms of our working activities and our shopping activities, and things still get done. There will be an economic hit should, God forbid, there be another lockdown, but it won't be anywhere near as big as it was. So depending on how serious the new variant is going to be, both medically and economically, we don't think the economic hit is going to be that bad. But we do know that when we do have lockdowns, because of the processes that I just described, they generate some inflation. They generate these pipeline pressures that cause log jams in various parts of the economy, and you will get another boost to this temporary inflation if the new variant does produce the dire consequences that we hope that it doesn't. But whatever it is, the new variant is going to add to the inflation problem. It might be a little bit of an addition, it might be a big one, and it's quite clear that Powell and other central bankers are very worried about this.
A final question, Chris, that will be on the minds of many people, business people, people whose jobs are on the line right now in certain of the hospitality industry, indeed in the travel industry as well. The antidote to inflation is high interest rates or higher interest rates. Given the amount of debt that governments, our own government, British government in particular, our own government actually is doing quite well, but that's another day's work. The British government, for example, if they have to increase interest rates on top of all the other vicissitudes businesses have had to endure, what's the effect of that going to be politically and indeed economically?
Well, it's not good, because if you reach the stage where the inflation problem has become entrenched such that you have to raise interest rates to deal with it, that means that you are trying explicitly to shrink the size of your economy. You're trying to reduce demand in order to reduce inflation. And in so doing, you will hit anybody that has debt. That's either a private individual, a company, or a government. Interest costs will go up. Electorally, that's really bad news from a mortgage point of view, because once mortgage rates start to go up, you will have that electoral hit. And that's something that Joe Biden hasn't had to deal with yet. The best guess that we have is that interest rates will be going up next year in the United States. They could be going up this month in the United Kingdom, and that there will be more interest rate rises in those two areas next year. A lot depends on how bad the inflation problem turns out to be. And I have to tell you, in all honesty, as an economist, we still don't know. We've been very wrong already on how bad it's been, and we're hoping that it does fall back. The fact that the oil price has fallen a lot in recent days is going to help that inflation outlook and may attenuate it for next year, such that the interest rate rises won't be that big. The laggard is Europe, which of course will affect most of your Irish listeners. And we think that the last central bank likely to raise interest rates will be the ECB. They are in trouble, though, because inflation in the Eurozone, which was out either this week or last week, is now the highest it's ever been since the creation of the euro.
Right.
You know how that will play in Germany, for example.
Yes.
Germany has an inflation rate at the moment that they haven't seen since they last had the Deutschmark.
Yes.
This is bad news politically in Germany. It's bad news across the Eurozone. And if this means that European interest rates rise next year, and I think that's a big if, we still don't know, that it will have very big economic and political consequences.
Right. And a final thought, with a clown in charge in Downing Street, and a very ambitious and economically literate chancellor in number 11 next door to him, that may well be the means by which Boris falls.
Well, something has to cut through eventually. Something has to be salient. I said in the United States it's petrol prices. I suspect in the United Kingdom, if the straw that could break the camel's back politically for Johnson could well be interest rates, could well be mortgage rates.
Right. Okay, Chris, we're very grateful to you as always for joining us. I understand. That's Chris Johns. Chris has his own podcast. It's called The Other Hand, which he conducts with Jim Power, one of our leading economists, who's also happily a contributor to The Stand. We're grateful to Chris, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.